Hello, this is Randy Thompson from the North Carolina Reading Service. Welcome to Music Review. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. For the next half hour, I shall be reading articles about music from such sources as the New York Times, the News and Observer, The Week Magazine, Rolling Stone, and Entertainment Weekly. Music Review is underwritten by Bill McClure, tuning pianos in the Raleigh area since 1968. For more information or to schedule a piano tuning appointment, please call 919-779-1755. This program is designed to provide the latest coverage of classical, folk, jazz, blues, rock, country, and pop music news. But first, these musical trivia questions. Today's musical trivia questions come to us from the website artsandculture.google.com. Question number one. What is a tenor cornet? Is it A, a male singer with a brassy voice? Is it B, a wind instrument with a range of 2.5 octaves? Is it C, a device used to mute horns? Or is it D, a brass instrument popular in military marching bands of the 1500s? Tenor cornet, what is that anyway? And question number two, what do you think would be the name of a musical instrument that it's described as, quote-unquote, a brass horn instrument that was invented in France and is similar in shape to a bassoon? Hints, it was used in the 18th century in military bands in Prussia and Russia and developed from the design of the serpent. The vertical length and straight pipe made it easier to play while marching or even riding horses. It has 6 finger holes, 3 keys, and a bell at the end that is uniquely painted to look like a dragon. So what is this instrument called? Is it A, a tenor cornet, B, a Russian bassoon, C, an English horn, or D, a copper serpent? Brass horn invented in France and used in 18th century military bands. The answers to these two important trivia questions will be given, as usual, at the end of today's program. Our transitions come to us from the website onthisday.com, and today, quote-unquote, is the 18th of February. Well, it was on this very day, back in 1735, that the first opera was performed in America. The work was Flora, or you might remember it as Hob in the Well, and was presented in Charleston, South Carolina, 1735, today. And it was 41 years ago today, 1981, that George Harrison was ordered to pay Abco Music the sum of $587,000 for, quote-unquote, subconscious plagiarism. Between his song, My Sweet Lord, and the Chiffons' He's So Fine. So be careful what you think. Subconscious plagiarism, 1981, today. And in country, folk, and Americana music, we have this article titled Brandi Carlile, her new album, In These Silent Days. This is review written by Mark Hirsch, published in Entertainment Weekly, October 2021 issue. In These Silent Days sound as though Brandi Carlile set out to make an album for Joni Mitchell, as she did for Tanya Tucker with 2019's Grammy-winning While I'm Living, realized how ludicrous that was and just went ahead and recorded it herself, song after song is tricked out with Mitchell-y touches, from the finger-picked melancholy of This Time Tomorrow, which recalls the circle game, to the ebullient Big Yellow Taxi, This Flight Tonight, strumminess that fuels You and Me on the Rock. The quietly expansive Letter to the Past finds Carlisle emulating another one of her idols, Elton John, not just in terms of floating piano ballad bombast, but in its pillowy acoustic guitars, heart-skip drums, and twisty descent that links the verses. Obvious nods to Joni and Elton aside, Silent Days mostly sounds like, well, Carlisle, drawing from and expanding on the empathy and inclusiveness she's built her entire catalog on. The lullaby-like Stay Gentle tracks as a message to her children and herself, while Broken Horses goes hard in the opposite direction, punctuated with squeaks and squeals that are new to her vocal arsenal. The album occasionally stumbles, namely in the unsuccessful metaphor of Mama Werewolf, and in Sinners, Saints, and Fools, an overly facile parable about conformity to the letter of religion that blinds its practitioners to the spirit of it. But even there, the song eventually warps into a heavy blues rock groan that has enough power purely on its own. Seven albums in, Carlisle has long since proven that she's incapable of making a bad record. Silent Days is proof that she's not about to start now. The review of the album, it gives it an A-. In These Silent Days, Brandi Carlisle. Drink, 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 from the 1924 operetta The Student Prince, introduces our classical music news. It's entitled Pavarotti, Billie Holiday, and Me, The Secrets of What Makes a Great Singer. This is written by Ion Bostrich on the 15th of February, 2022, in The Guardian. As a young opera singer, I was snobbish about the three tenors, but a legendary Pavarotti performance made me realize that the key wasn't vocal pyrotechnics, but emotional connection, the iconic tenor of my lifetime. And in terms of sheer voice, the very best was Luciano Pavarotti. I only heard him once in the flesh, in a production of Verdi's La Forza del Destino at London's Royal Opera House. His interest in the stage action was limited, but his vocal resources were only marginally depleted after decades of shining high C's, and I felt the magic. What had propelled Pavarotti into the stratosphere of international celebrity was a celebratory event at the 1990 World Cup in the Baths of Caracalla in Rome, the famous three tenors concert in which he sang Puccini's aria Nessun Dorma, with its climatic high B on the word Vincerò, I will win. I was then a young singer making my way in the apparently more rarefied worlds of Lieder and Mozart opera, and I was more than a little snobbish about all this. A snobbishness that no doubt sprang from defensiveness about my vocal capacities as well as protectiveness for the leaner repertoire that I performed and loved. Sir Colin Davis very adventurously once asked me to sing the Verdi Requiem, the nearest I ever got to the Italian big guns, but I knew it was not for me. But the Ron Howard documentary on Pavarotti set me thinking about what we really value in great singing, the triumphalism, the sheer athleticism of the classic tenor voice is all very well, but watching Pavarotti singing Puccini's Tosca, late in his career conducted by his friend and fellow tenor Placido Domingo, I realized that he was not just a voice, not just a tenor, but an expressive artist of extraordinary gifts. The desperation of the aria draws from Pavarotti that miraculous interaction between the personal life experience and artistic material that is at the heart of what great singers do. Great singers such as Pavarotti or Billie Holiday or Bob Dylan. My latest recording is a collection of 17th century Venetian and Neapolitan opera arias, written in an era in which the tenor was not the shining star he became in the course of the 19th and 20th centuries. Indeed, the beginnings of the tenor were lowly. The term itself comes from the Latin verb tenere, to hold, and emerged from medieval vocal ensemble music, in which the higher male voice provided an underpinning in terms of pitch and long vowels. Nothing glamorous there. But by the early 17th century, the tenor had emerged as a crucial figure in the development of the new form of opera. The earliest opera that we still perform as part of the repertoire is Monteverdi's Orfeo, written in 1607 for the Gonzaga court at Mantua, with the dominating title role played by a tenor. The story that is usually told is that the glamour of the castrato singer, a male mezzo-soprano or soprano with prodigious power and virtuosity, came in the course of the 17th century to force the tenor into the shadows. While there is an element of truth to this, it remained the case that significant roles were written for particularly charismatic singers with tenor voices well into the 18th century. The orchestras these arias were written for were smaller, as were most of the theaters they were sung in. The instruments were less loud. The vocal writing can be florid, but it never focuses on sheer virtuosity, either in terms of fast passage work or cultivated high notes. The emphasis is on the natural voice, not over-projected, moving within a moderate extension of its speaking range and using vowel sounds and consonants to create colors in much the same way as the great jazz singers Billie Holiday, for example. The article skips down, ends with this. Maybe the artificial barriers are breaking down, and maybe classical singers are not first and foremost tenors, sopranos, baritones, or whatnot, but just singers, plain and simple. T-Bone Walker, playing Stormy Monday, introduces our blues music news. Who is T-Bone Walker? This is written by Patricia Bauer, Britannica.com. T-Bone Walker, by name of Aaron Thibodeau Walker, born May 28, 1910, Linden, Texas, U.S., died March 16, 1975, Los Angeles, California. American musician and songwriter who was a major figure in modern blues. He was the first important electric guitar soloist in the blues and one of the most influential players in the idiom's history. The son of musical parents, Walker grew up in Dallas, Texas, where he led bluesman Blind Lemon Jefferson around the city streets and began playing guitar in his teens. After touring in Texas, Walker settled in California in 1934. There he began playing electric guitar and formed his own bands. Walker recorded prolifically in the 1940s and 50s, accompanied by small bands that provided backgrounds for his blues singing and guitar solos. Unlike previous blues guitarists, Walker phrased in single-note lines that featured fluent, masterly technique and swinging rhythmic ease. He was noted as a clever songwriter, and his 1947 hit, Call It Stormy Monday, playing in the background now, became one of the most enduring modern blues standards.
Crazy about my baby. Yes! Send her home to me.
T-Bone Walker earned a Grammy in 1969, was inducted into the Blues Hall of Fame in 1980, and into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame in 1987. Marvin Gaye's Sexual Healing introduces today's music research and technology. It's entitled British Zoo Hopes That Music by Marvin Gaye Will Put Monkeys in the Mood. This is written by Jay Croft, published in CNN on the 12th of February, 2022. The music of Motown's Marvin Gaye is legendary for getting folks in the mood for some quote-unquote sexual healing. So approaching Valentine's Day, a British zoo wondered if it could lead endangered monkeys to say, "Let's get it on," too. The furry residents of the Trentham Monkey Forest in Stafford, England, got some soulful encouragement from a gay impersonator. David Largy performed some of Gaye's classic hits inside the Barbary Macaw Habitat to put them in the mood for breeding. We thought it could be a creative way to encourage our females to show a little affection to males that might not have been so lucky in love, park director Matt Lovat said on the zoo's website. Females in season mate with several males, so paternity among our furry residents is never known. Each birth is vital to the species, with Barbary macaws being classified as endangered. About 8,000 to 10,000 remain in the wild, according to the Barbary Macaw Awareness and Conservation Organization. The zoo says the animals engaged in some foreplay like grooming and teeth chattering, so it's possible the tactic worked. Birthing season is in the late spring or early summer. Hopefully, Marvin's done his magic, and we can welcome some new babies, Lovat said. Judy Collins singing the song she wrote titled Gaelic Lullaby introduces our rock and pop music news. It's entitled Why Judy Collins is releasing her first album of original songs at 82. Spellbound kicks off a busy 2022 for the legendary talent. This is written by Gary Graff in Billboard.com on the 6th of January, 2022. Judy Collins is no stranger to songwriter. Ever since Leonard Cohen challenged her to write more for herself back in the mid-60s, which led to Collins penning Since You Asked, for her 1967 album Wildflowers, she's contributed songs of her own alongside her often definitive interpretations of other writers' work, including songs from Cohen, Bob Dylan, Joni Mitchell, Stephen Sondheim, and more. But Spellbound, coming out February 25th, marks Collins' first release on which every song is from her own hand, an achievement that seems remarkable and surprising after more than 60 years of recording.
Sleeps at home.
You know, things happen when something shifts in your life and you put another discipline in, which leads you to dig out things that might never have happened. The 82-year-old singer explains from her home in New York, "The pandemic gave me a chance to actually sit with things that were cooking and get them cooked so they were well enough to go into the studio and record them." Collins started work on Spellbound in 2019, though much of the cooking began 3 years earlier. During 2016, Collins assigned herself the task of writing a poem every day for 90 days, which at her husband Lewis Nelson's suggestion became a full year. That gave the album, Collins's 29th studio release overall, a head start, and she reached into the trove of 365 poems to pull out lyrics for what became Shipwrecked Manor and Wild with the Mist. When the pandemic hit, she says, "My job was to sit down at the piano and write a poem that day, or try to finish the ones that were sitting there. If anything spoke to me as a song, write it. It's the only thing I was doing. I thought I should write a script around it," Collins quips. "It could very well be a musically, a history of my life. They all surprise you. They come out of nowhere," Collins adds about the process. Dylan was frank about his writing. He said in Chronicles, he doesn't know where it came from. "I don't know how it began," he's quoted as saying. "It lasted 10 years and then it stopped. That's about all the analysis I need, to be frank. We're responsible for sitting down and closing the door and turning off the phone, but we don't know where the hell it comes from. We have muses and we have DNA and we have disciplines." With additional poems remaining from her 2016 exercise and, of course, other ideas that have come since, Collins expects there are more songs where Spellbound came from. They'll have to wait in line, however, behind other endeavors she has planned, including a children's record. Collins predicts she'll record sometime or another in the next 6 months, another full album, and possibly another duets project. Collins, who returned to live performing last year and has shows scheduled throughout 2022, also has hundreds of starts for a new book, though she's not sure what direction her next one will take. Nevertheless, she says that there are all these songs that might have been on this album that have to find a home. "So I've got a Spellbound too, maybe. I'd just like to keep writing. My hope is that I can keep the poetry coming, and from that, the songs will come. I've gotten into a daily routine of writing something, whether it's a poem or a chapter that might be part of a book or a song. Whatever it is, I have to keep it coming. You never know when the inspiration's going to come along, and you don't want to squander it." So how'd you do on today's musical trivia questions? Well, the answer to our first question, what is a tenor cornet? Is that A, a male singer with a brassy voice? Was it B, a wind instrument with a range of 2.5 octaves? Was it C, a device used to mute horns? Or was it D, a brass instrument popular in military marching bands of the 1500s? Correct answer? Answer B. As noted in the article titled 10 Unusual Musical Instruments from Around the World, published in artsandculture.google.com, also known as a lizard for its serpentine shape, the tenor cornet is a wind instrument popular around 1500 to 1650. It is made from a wooden pipe with finger holes along the body and is notoriously difficult to play. The instrument's mouthpiece is more similar to that of a brass instrument than a typical woodwind, requiring the maintenance of specialized shaping of the lips and mouth, which is tiring if done for an extended period of time. With a range of 2.5 octaves, the cornet was mainly used to reinforce the human voice in choirs, particularly those of countertenors. And the answer to our second question, what do you think would be the name of a musical instrument that's described as a brass horn instrument that was invented in France and is similar in shape to a bassoon? It was used in the 18th century in military bands in Prussia and Russia and developed from the design of a serpent. Vertical length and straight pipe made it easier to play while marching or even riding horses. It has 6 finger holes, 3 keys, and a bell at the end that is uniquely painted to look like a dragon. Would that be A, a tenor cornet, B, a Russian bassoon, C, an English horn, or D, a copper serpent? Correct answer, answer B, a Russian bassoon. As noted in that article above, the Russian bassoon is a misleading name for this instrument, as although it is similar in shape to a classical bassoon, is actually a type of brass horn. It's also now Russian, having been invented in France and earning its misnomer from being used in the 18th century in military bands in Prussia and Russia. So in recognition of 82-year-old Judy Collins' continuing singer career, let's close out today's program with her cover of Meredith Willson's Till There Was You from the 1957 musical The Music Man.
There were bells on the hill, but I never
We've run out of time for today's episode of Music Review. Be sure to tune in at the same time next week. This program is also available as a podcast after the broadcast in our website, ncreadingservice.org. As we leave you now, remember these words. Kindness is a language which blind people see and deaf people hear. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. If you have a suggestion for music to feature on this program, please leave a message for me at 919-832-5138. I'm Randy Thompson, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. Music Review is underwritten by Bill McClure, tuning pianos in the Raleigh area since 1968. For more information or to schedule a piano tuning, please call 919-779-1755. So long, until next time.
Till there was